This is the Bomb Brain. Welcome back to the Bond Brain for another installment of Bond Super Skills. We've had airplane piloting with Christopher Morales, a multilingual episode with Emery Cormier, and with Alex Lamas, scuba diving. This time, folks, we're going to bring on a Bond community member here who sits at the stick of a helicopter. He's been at it for quite a while. And welcome to the Bond Brain, Rob Purdy. How are you, man?
I'm great, bud, and I'm excited to be here through all the technical challenges and schedule challenges. You're a pillar of the Bond community and certainly one of the ones I look forward to listening to every podcast, and honored to sit here on Skype with you. I appreciate you having me.
Oh, I appreciate the compliments, man. It's a lot of fun to do these things. It's a lot of fun to reach out to people and connect and hear their stories. So tell us. You're a helicopter pilot. How did you get there? How did you get up there?
I am. And Bond actually had a little bit to do with it, ironically enough. But mainly for me, I grew up just an aviation nerd and had a father who was patient with that love of aviation. He had no particular interest in it. But anytime we would leave the confines of Hot Spring County, Arkansas, and drive down to Northwest Florida or on the east coast of Florida and past the various military installations like Pensacola Naval Air Station and Eglin Air Force Base and things like that, he would always let me stop and look around at all the museums, and that really fostered a love of aviation. And that combined with a television show called Black Sheep Squadron in the 70s.
Oh, I loved that show.
Oh, I couldn't get enough of it. And the same patient father was nice enough to let me stay up past my bedtime when that show came on, that I could watch all of it. So I went to bed at 9 instead of 8:30 on the nights that Black Sheep Squadron was on. And then of course Star Wars hit, and all the World War II aviation books in my public school library and my county library, checked them out multiple times and just couldn't get enough of it. And that Top Gun hit when I was in high school. That kept it going. And then going to air shows at Little Rock Air Force Base growing up. And then we also had my hometown of Malvern, Arkansas is known as the brick capital of the world. What a great designation that is. But we have something called the Brick Fest every summer. And one summer, a couple of Arkansas National Guard pilots brought a Cobra down here. And when that Cobra helicopter landed on the football field, I was, or the softball field, excuse me, I couldn't get off of it. Just climbed in it, over it. And, you know, God bless those two pilots that answered every question and took the time to spend time with me and answer, and just let me spend time with it. It all conglomerated into a love of military aviation that I decided to pursue. And I didn't pursue a civilian path. It was completely military. So I had finished my sophomore year of college and was running out of money. I was working in a machine shop close to the school I was attending. And I was a decent student, but not a great student, making B's and C's. And I started to look for avenues to become a military aviator. The school I went to had an aviation program that you started really in your junior year. I knew I wasn't going to be able to afford that, so I took the Marine Corps Navy flight aptitude test and did okay on it. But the recruiter at the Hot Springs recruiting office and for the Navy is like, "Hey, I'm glad you did great on the test, but you're going to have to finish your degree before we can, you know, pursue anything further."
Right.
Well, yeah. Later on that week, the Army recruiter, because they all trade notes, the Army recruiter calls me at work. And what would you say if I told you I could have you in flight school by this time next year? And I said, I love the sound of that. And of course, my dad was furious. He said, "You'll never finish school. You'll never get that piece of paper." Now, I did later on, but I did it more to probably prove my dad wrong than I did because I wanted to finish the degree. But I did finish my bachelor's degree later on. But long story short, I put in a warrant officer flight training packet with the Army recruiter and enlisted in late 1990 and went to basic training in 1991. And then started flight school in the summer of 91, and I've been flying ever since.
So some of the aircraft that you were lucky enough to fly in the military.
Yes, sir.
Obviously you can't tell everything, but
oh, sure. Sure can. No sneaky stuff with me. I started in UH-1 Hueys, which is of course popular from the Vietnam War. I say popular, right. More well known. My primary and instrument aircraft was the UH-1 Huey. And then in late 1991, the way the Army flight school was structured back then, you went through what was called a multi-track program. And they had four tracks that it was driven by needs of the Army, but you got somewhat of a vote in it based on what your academic performances were, your check ride performances were, and things like that. So you could stay in Hueys. You could go into an OH-58 Alpha Charlie, which is essentially a Bell 206 Jet Ranger. I think everybody's probably familiar from Spy Who Loved Me and the pre-title sequence of For Your Eyes Only. That's a Jet Ranger. Right. So that was the OH-58 Alpha Charlie, and then you could get into a UH-60 Blackhawk, and the coveted for me, the AH-1 Cobra track. So I was blessed to be able to track into Cobras, and I graduated flight school April of 92 as an AH-1 Cobra pilot.
Wow.
So and so then
combat,
I was
combat aircraft.
Like, absolutely. Yeah. I would have walked on my hands through broken glass to be a Cobra pilot. That was the focus. I wanted that above all else. And that was the goal when I went to flight school. And that was the goal while I was in flight school. And then I flew Cobras till about 1996 and was advised to get off that sinking ship. It was fast going away and being divested from the Army's inventory. And the summer of 1996, I went to the AH-64 Alpha Model Apache course.
Oh, the Apache.
Yes, sir. Ended up flying all three models of the Apache. I was a standardization instructor pilot in Delta and E model Apaches when I retired from the Army in 2017. And I'm also qualified in UH-60 Blackhawks. But I never did fly that very much. I just happened to go to school for it and have the qualification. And then when I left the military in 2017, I got into flying air ambulance. And since I've been in air ambulance, I've flown EC-145s, which is an Airbus helicopter. And most recently, I've been in Bell 407s flying here in Hot Springs, Arkansas.
All right. So, okay, of all those aircraft I've the only one I've ever been in is the Blackhawk.
Okay.
You know, you look at some of these and you think some of this aircraft, you know, some of it obviously is Apaches and stuff like that, combat aircraft. And then for people that are not familiar with this kind of stuff, when you get into these, a lot of these look like transport aircraft. But let me tell you, when I got in that Blackhawk, it was all part of for people who work for the Army to experience some of the things the soldiers do. So I did a week of basic training, which I volunteered for because I'd never been in the military. And right. Why I decided to do that at 50 years old, that was probably not a good idea. But nonetheless, one of the things we got to do was, you know, they basically strapped us into the back of one of these Blackhawks while the guy put it through its paces. And I got to be honest, I didn't even know the aircraft could do some of the things that this guy did with it, you know, while we were inside it. It was the greatest roller coaster ride of my entire life.
That's good.
I had never been in anything. Yeah, I had never. I mean, like, you know, pull it up, stall it, drop it out, turn it on its side. I mean, there was just things I didn't even realize that some of the aircraft that are in our military could even do.
Yeah. Yeah. I hear the joke a lot about how, you know, the military buys everything. Everything's purchased from the lowest bidder. I was never disappointed with the quality or performance of any military aircraft I was ever blessed to fly. They are good machines.
Right. So You retired in what year?
2017. After 26.
Okay, so recently.
Right. Yeah, wow. I've been in air ambulance since 2017.
And if you can tell them, because, you know, when you're in the military, you can't always disclose everything. Close calls, harrowing situations, anything along those lines?
They all run together at one point, because I, you know, once the GWAT kicked off after 9/11, GWAT, I'll try to stay away from acronyms, Global War on Terror. Right. Obviously, all the military became extremely busy around 2001, 2002 timeframe. I was in on the Iraq invasion in 2003. I had done a couple of Kuwait deployments before that, because we kind of knew what was coming. And then the 3rd Infantry Division, which is where I was when we fielded Delta Model Apaches and fire control radar, we ended up doing a Kuwait deployment in 2002 with an armor brigade, because they wanted to do some testing with the new fire control radar on the Longbow Apache. And then that subsequently led to the 2003 deployment, which was Enduring Freedom at the time, and then it later became Operation Iraqi Freedom.
Our
attack battalion was on the initial invasion when we crossed from Kuwait into Iraq, and then we were on the west side going towards Baghdad when the 1st Marine Division was on the east side, as the race was on to who was going to get to Baghdad first. After that, I did an Afghanistan deployment in 2005, 2006. I was part of a standardization organization in the Army from 2007 to about 2011. And that organization was in and out of both Afghanistan and Iraq for about 3 and 4 week periods, about twice a year. So it was got to see about how every aviation brigade was doing business in Iraq and Afghanistan during that time. And then I ended up getting assigned to the 101st Air Assault Division in 2011, spent about 2.5 years up there, deployed with them to Afghanistan, and then went back to Fort Rucker and ran the same standardization organization I talked about earlier until I retired in 2017. So all told, about 2 trips to Iraq, 3 deployments to Afghanistan, a couple of Kuwaits, spent a couple of years in Korea on 2 different times, and did a Germany rotation, and, you know, combat in and amongst all those. So combat has all its excitement and challenges, and got to have plenty of that.
Holy cow. Right. So, personal opinion. Many years ago, Boeing Sikorsky had proposed a replacement for the Apache, I believe, called a Comanche.
Uh-huh.
Did you ever get to see one of those? Did you ever get to come?
Sure.
I mean, eventually it was scrapped, but it never came into play, right?
Yeah, one of the ones that made it through is actually in the museum at Fort, well, it's called Fort Novosel now with the name changes. Sometimes I can't keep up.
Right,
the VA museum at Fort Novosel has one of the ones that was actually built and flying, and the curator down there, great guy named Bob Mitchell. I encourage anybody to check out the Army Aviation Museum if you're ever down in Southeast Alabama, and you too can see the Comanche. I think the Comanche was just a victim of incredible progress in processor technology, and I think the technology was advancing more rapidly than the acquisition could keep up with, because as it seems like as soon as a one processor came out, a faster one came out 2 weeks later, and then the Comanche just couldn't keep up with what the Army kept requiring of the program. And I think the right decision was made, because a lot of the funding that was going towards Comanche went towards things we needed immediately with the war on terror as that was kicking off. And I think the right choices were made to go ahead and to get out of Comanche. But it was incredible machine. Obviously, I never flew it. I saw some of the same demonstrations that most folks did, and was able to crawl around the airframe at the museum. It would have been neat to see, but I think the right decision was made when they decided to scrap the program.
Now, did you ever see any of that technology. There's a similar story with the Seawolf submarine, and you know, they build like three of them, and I think all three are in service. But ultimately, they shut it down and moved over to this Virginia class. But a lot of the Seawolf technology rolled into the Virginia class. Did you see that happen with the Comanche to, say, the existing Apaches?
I think that both Sikorsky and Boeing both probably benefited from technologies that went into Comanche. But I was so Apache focused at that point in my life, it would be transparent to me to know. I'm sure there are technologies in the E model Apache, and probably even in some of the future vertical lift machines that we're seeing come out now that benefited from Comanche. But I wouldn't know specifically which ones they were.
Yeah, actually, I think some of the targeting systems, although upgraded, did somehow get incorporated over into the F-35 program.
The helmet system that Comanche used reminds me a lot of what F-35 is using now.
That's speculation on my part.
Me too.
Exactly that helmet mounted targeting was exactly what I was alluding to.
I agree with that. It's speculation on my part too, but there are a lot of similarities between what Comanche was going to use and what F-35 ended up fielding.
It sounds like, dude, so far you have had an incredible journey and an incredible life. And,
it's been great. And, you know, Bond was part of that, ironically enough, with the flying sequences at the beginning of For Your Eyes Only and the helicopter fighting and Diamonds Are Forever. I know that's not everybody's favorite movie, but I sure loved seeing all the helicopters shooting up the oil platform in that scene.
Right. So. Yeah, it always kind of killed me and that's kind of why I started this particular series, because, I mean, it would be impossible for one man to be able to go through the amount of education and the amount of training and time to be able to fly an airplane, be able to, you know, scuba dive to extremely deep depths, to also fly a helicopter, also fly there's only 24 hours in a day. There's only so much you can do in your life, and his skills seem to come and go, but still, I mean, the movies are still entertaining that way. I don't really care, but
right, and he's great at all of it. And when I think of Spectre, those opening sequences in Mexico City, that's a gentleman named Blackie Schwartz that is doing that helicopter flying. And
that's a special stunt helicopter too, isn't it?
I think it's a BK-117. It's the same one that a gentleman named Aaron Fitzgerald, if you look him up online, and he was, I think, at Oshkosh recently. And the things that people swear that is CGI and that's movie stunt magic, that is absolutely not movie stunt magic. Those Red Bull helicopter guys do amazing things aerobatically with those helicopters. But for James Bond to be a casual helicopter pilot, you know, once every few months, I don't think there's any way you'd be able to pull off some of the flying that he was doing over Mexico City.
No, it's
fun to something.
Yeah. I mean, there's a reason there's all that training. There's a reason that you got to have minimum flight hours to retain your certifications and so much, there's so much that goes into it. Anything else you want to add here or share?
No, it's been a great career, and it's fun to be able to think that, you know, I've got one small skill set that James Bond has. And
hey, man, I'd be touting that all the time if I were you.
air ambulance has been almost as much fun as being in the military was. You know, that was a good transition for me to still be able to apply a skill set learned in the military and apply it to community-based service, and being back here in Hot Springs, Arkansas, to be able to still go out and put a helicopter on a two-lane road at night and have people that need you to be able to be there and help. That's a great way to spend your post-Army career. So I try to have the same level of enthusiasm as Chris Morales, and he's a lot younger than me, but I love helicopters just as much as he loves airplanes. So.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I'm sure. Chris is a great guy. He's very passionate. He's very passionate about it, but yeah, he's got a lot of energy. I have two daughters, his same age. They all have, They all have a lot of energy. Yeah.
Yeah.
I fall asleep at 8 o'clock and then 2 hours later they go out for the party, you know? So it's,
I enjoyed listening to Chris talk about flying as well. Cause I remember when it was still new and you wanted to tell everybody about it. So it's a good on him.
All right. I guess that is all. Thanks a ton, man, for coming on here.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. I appreciate you having me.
Sharing your story. And, you know, a lot of people that don't necessarily do podcasts and YouTube and stuff, whenever I reach out to them, a lot of times they're a little reluctant to do it, you know? You know, I certainly appreciate you taking time out of your day to kind of share this stuff with us. And hopefully one day we'll actually get to meet in person, man.
Yeah, I'd love it. I wish I could get to Gatherall. There's so many people in the Bond community that I want to meet in person. There's just, you click with people and you know you'd be really good friends with them outside of the social media and the virtual world. And the Bond community is just full of people like that. And it's been a blessing to share not only helicopter flying, but a love of James Bond across this community. And even if it's virtual, to meet so many good people, because it's been a blessing to me. And it's good to see that, you know, I'm not the only aviation and Bond fan out there, that we've all got that shared sickness.
Yeah, no, there's other one. There's also Jerome Crowell. I haven't seen Jerome in a while, but he's actually an airline pilot as well. So there's a lot of aviation enthusiasts, but you know, as you said, it's a tough road in. It can be a very expensive thing, or you can, when you take the military route, obviously, you know, that's a whole other level of difficulty, you know, to get into aviation. It is really, really just a tough, time consuming feel. And you could see why the people that are in it, that get to that point, that reach their goals, are so passionate about it, because I don't know that anyone would stick with it, you know,
right,
if you didn't have that passion the whole time. Yeah.
Well, it was competitive, but I fought tooth and nail to get in there. I knew I was not going to have a civilian avenue into aviation, and the military has been a blessing for me, and it helped me grow up in ways I didn't even appreciate until I got a little bit older. Yeah, I'm always happy to talk aviation, military, James Bond, whatever. So I appreciate you reaching out and having me on.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for doing this, man. And I think we're going to wrap it up here, folks. This is Bud West with the Bond Brain. And we're going to hear more from Rob Purdy. I'm going to find another way to get this man on here. And some other passions. We'll get him. We're going to get him on YouTube, too. Before you know it, he's going to have his own Instagram and YouTube channel. Right? So, but this is Bud West with the Bond Brain. Bond Brain will return.